41. McNabb boys didn't know whom they did expect Maniac to bring to the party. But one thing for sure, they did not expect him to come walking through the front door with a black kid. And that was only half of it. From the way the kid swaggered in, from the candy bar that jutted like a chocolate stogie from the corner of his mouth, from the ripped stone evil scowl on his face, the kid had to be none other than Mars Bar Thompson himself. If black meant bad, if black meant in your face nastiness, if black meant as far from white as you could get, then Mars Bar Thompson was the blackest of the black. Here, in the middle of their living room, stopping the party, neighborhood kids, the Cobras, even George McNabb, stopping them dead as traffic. Just walked in through the front door, the steel door, breezed right on in, past the bars, standing there. I own this jointing there. Before they knew what was happening, before anyone could reach for anything, which of course is just what Maniac had in mind. Remembering how little Grayson had known about black people and black homes, thinking of the McNabbs' wrong-headed notions, thinking of Mars Bar's knee-jerk reaction to anyone wearing a white skin, and thinking, naturally, what else would you expect? Whites never go inside blacks' homes, much less inside their thoughts and feelings. And blacks are just as ignorant of whites. What white kid could hate blacks after spending 5 minutes in the Beals house? And what black kid could hate whites after answering Mrs. Pickwell's dinner whistle? But the East Enders stayed in the East, and the West Enders stayed in the West. And the less they knew about each other, the more they invented. It hadn't been easy finding Mars Bars, taking all his lip about cheating on the race, taking some bumps, some shoves, Mars goading him to fight, but keeping his own cool, matching Mars Bars glare for glare, telling him he wasn't as bad as he thought he was. Really stoking him now, making him slam his candy bar to the ground. No? You want to tell me why I ain't so bad, fish? Go ahead, for I waste ya. Chest to chest. Keeping cool, letting Mars do all the huffing. Simple. You don't cross Hector. You stay over here where it's safe. How bad would you be over there? Stepping back then, folding his arms, smugging it up just enough, standing there in his white skin, gazing nonchalantly about, six blocks deep in the heart of the black side. Guess that makes me badder than you. They did not go straight to the McNabbs. First they went to the Pickwells. Maniac wanted Mars Bars to see the best, the West End had to offer. The little Pickwells made as much fuss over Mars Bar as over Maniac. They believed, as did all little kids in the West End, that he carried 100 Mars Bars with him at all times. Not surprisingly, Mrs. Pickwell never batted an eye when she saw who was coming to dinner. It was quite a sight, all right. 16 Pickwells plus Maniac plus a down-and-out golf caddy. 18 or so-called white faces, and Mars Bar Thompson. To his credit, Mars Bar didn't use the word fish belly or honky once, though on one occasion he did bend the truth a mite. When a Pickwell kid asked him if it was true about the famous race in April, did Maniac really beat him going backward? Mars Bar studied his fork for a minute and said, "Yeah, he went backward. But you got the story wrong. Wasn't me he built. Was my brother, Milky Way." The little kids couldn't understand why the grown-ups laughed for 5 minutes after that. As for Mars Bar himself, his expression never changed until the dinner was almost over, when the littlest non-baby Pickwill, Dolly, called him Mr. Barr. And even though it wasn't so much a smile as a crack in the glare, even if Mars wasn't letting on, Maniac could tell he was pleased to learn his fame had spread to the West. When they left, half the Pickwill kids followed them, begging Mars to perform his legendary feat of stopping traffic. "Don't," Maniac warned. "It might not work over here." But the Pickwells persisted, and when they reached Marshall Street, Mars Barr commanded, "Stay here," and stepped into the traffic. Not only did he shamble, jive, shuck, and hip doodle at his own sweet pace, he did something he had never done in the East End. He came to a complete and utter halt halfway across and let nothing but the evil in his eyes take care of the rest. He stood like that for one full minute. By the time he finally moved on to the far side, so the legend goes, 23 cars, several bicycles, and a bus were stacked to a dead stop in both directions. Maniac hurried across while the Pickwill stood at the curb, cheering and waving goodbye. But no one was cheering now in Fort McNab, and Maniac knew that despite the swagger and the scowl and the chocolate stogie, Mars Barr Thompson was one uneasy dude. Chapter 42. George McNab was the first to speak up. He was stretched out on the only new piece of furniture in the house, a tilt-back lounge chair. Said McNab, "What's he doing here?" The awkward silence that followed was mercifully broken by Piper, tugging on Maniac's arm. "Where's my birthday present? What'd you get me?" Maniac pulled the present from his pocket. Piper exclaimed, "A watch?" "No," said Maniac, "a compass. It tells you which direction you're going."
"Like to the ocean?"
asked Russell. "The ocean, Mexico, anywhere in the world. Only one thing."
"What's that?"
Maniac took the compass from Piper's hand. "I'm keeping it till school's over. If you go every day, both of you, then you can have it back and sail around the world."
"On our raft!"
Piper cheered. "Is it a deal?" Piper and Russell and Maniac did a three-way high five.
"It's a deal!"
George McNab pulled himself up from the easy chair and shuffled into the kitchen. He wore bareback slippers over bare feet. His white ankles were dirty. He took a beer can from the fridge and headed for the steps.
"Let me know when it leaves," he said, and went upstairs.
Maniac could feel the voltage that surged through Mars Barr and cracked black lightning from his eyes. Quickly, he clapped his hands.
"Hey! Isn't this a party? Where are the games?"
So they played games. Silly games, whose main objective seemed to be shrieking and screaming. Mars Barr allowed himself to be dragged into them, but his jaw was clenched and his eyes kept straying to the gaping hole in the ceiling and to the cobras who were slouching against the walls and baseboards, sipping beers and watching his every move. None of them had spoken since Mars and Maniac walked in. Of course, as far as the little kids were concerned, the highlight of the whole party was not the birthday boy, Piper McNab, but the McNabs' new pillbox. They found every excuse to stay inside it. They fought over space at the narrow, gunnery slots. When Mars Barr whispered to Maniac,
"What is that?"
Maniac said it was a bomb shelter. Then Russell called,
"Let's play Rebels! Whites in the pillbox, blacks outside!"
A cheer went up, and a dozen kids stampeded into the pillbox. Their gabble circled the cinder block walls and popped from the gunnery slots.
"I'm gonna be white!"
"I'm white!"
"Me too!"
"Too many in here! We need more blacks!"
"Not me!"
"Not me!"
"We ain't got enough guns!"
"Only the ones with the guns are in. The rest, ya, get out. You're black."
"Give me a gun."
"I had it first."
"Come on, ya meatballs. Blacks is the best part. You get to charge."
Yeah, we get to lose.
Look, you can use beer cans for grenades. You can lob grenades.
Then you do it.
Well, somebody gotta be black. Else we ain't playing. I'm counting till I hit 10. I want to see 5 of y'all out of here. 1.
Russell counted. No one came out. Not at 9, not at 10, not after 10.
Maniac and Marsbar stared in silence at the gunnery slots where wide open eyes began to appear, one pair atop another. The three words that Marsbar sneered, the joke that he spat out, yeah, bomb shelter, did not even have the moment to themselves, for just then another word, Geronimo, came plunging from the sky and landed with a floor-jarring, heart-stomping crash directly behind him. A cobra had jumped up from the hole, a fat, red-haired cobra, who was now rolling on the floor and laughing so hard, as were all the cobras, that his face matched the color of his hair.
You see him? You see him, Chuck?
I never see his face. Somebody check out his pants. Check out his drawers. Oh, man. Oh. Maniac had to wrap Marsbar in a bear hug to keep him from charging the fat red roller. The laughter stopped as if cut by scissors. The cobras were standing. John McNabb sauntered forward.
You got a problem, Sonny?
That wasn't funny, John, said Maniac. He could have been hurt. McNabb kept his eyes on Marsbar.
I ain't talking to you, McGee. I'm talking to Sonny here. Don't you like our party, Sonny boy?
Marsbar strained against Maniac's arms.
You ain't got to worry about me coming to no more your parties, fish belly. And you ain't got to worry about me invading this piss hole. Anybody come to a block away, they faint from the smell.
McNabb advanced. Maniac shouted,
John, you owe me one. I brought the boys back.
McNabb took another step, then stayed. The cobra stayed, and Maniac, clamping the struggling Marsbar for dear life, lugged him down a gauntlet of seething eyes to the door and the street. Marsbar wrenched free and stomped on ahead. Maniac followed. It was almost dark. High above, the streetlights were buzzing on, one by one. After several blocks, Marsbar wheeled.
You suckered me! You softened me up with them pick peoples, then bring me here? What'd you think? I was gonna cry?
Okay, I come over. I did it. It's done. And don't you be coming round no more. You hear me, fish? 'Cause you ain't only seen me half bad yet. He turned and headed due east. Maniac walked another way. It was a good question. What had he thought? What had he expected? A miracle? Well, come to think of it, maybe one had happened. While he was looking for one miracle, maybe another had snuck up on him. It happened as he was clamping and lugging Marsbar down the gauntlet of cobras, trying to keep him alive. And what was Marsbar doing? Fighting him. Maniac, straining to get loose and bust some cobras, outnumbered, outwitted, but not outhearted. That's when Maniac felt it. Pride for this East End warrior, whom Maniac could feel trembling in his arms, scared as any normal kid would be, but not showing it to them.
Yeah, you're bad all right, Marsbar. You're more than bad. You're good.
Maniac stopped. He had been walking in circles. It was dark. He turned one way, then another. For the briefest moment, thinking to go home. Thinking it's time to go home now. Then remembering that once again, he had no home to go to. Chapter 43. He slept in the park that night, and for the next dozen or so, sometimes in the buffalo shed, other times the band shell benches or the pavilion. The nights were warm now. June was on the way. He ate when and where he could. For apples and carrots and day-old hamburger buns, you couldn't beat the deer and buffalo pens. A new Acme had opened, and the bakery section always had a tray of free samples sitting on the counter. And then there were always the Pickwells. It may have been an illusion, but it seemed that the hungrier he got, the farther Mrs. Pickwell's whistle traveled. Some dinner times, there was hardly a spot in town from which he could not hear it. He read in the library. He joined pickup games in the park, baseball, basketball. School was letting out. There were more kids. Mornings were the best. He would rise with the sun's color, before the sun itself, before the bison, and set out. He came to think of these apple skin hours as his special time with the town. There was not a street or alleyway or house or store, not even a garage, that he did not recognize. His footsteps fell everywhere but on the bridge over the Schuylkill, his eyes everywhere but on the P&W trolley trestle. And the people? Most of them he did not know by name or face, yet they revealed themselves to him even as they slept. He knew them by their windows and cars and porches and toys they left outside. But most of all, he knew them by their backyards. Flowers, weeds, junk, pet houses, tree houses, vegetable gardens, rubber tires, grass ranging from desert sparse to shaggy to trim as a marine's haircut. The backyards were as different, as individual as faces. East End and West End, black and white, would begin only when the alarm clocks rang. For now, before sunrise, there were no divisions, no barriers. There were only the people, the families, the town, his town, as much his town as anyone's. He knew he could be sleeping right then in the Beals house, or the Pickwells, or even the McNabs. But beyond that, for a few enchanted moments each newborn morning, he believed there was not a single home in Two Mills, not a single one that would not happily welcome him to enter and to go upstairs and curl up between its sleepers. Maybe that's why he left his band shell bench late one night in mid-June and went to someone's backyard on Hamilton Street. Someone whose leaf lettuce he had watched growing, and quietly opened the gate and closed it behind him, and laid himself down on a white wicker love seat on the back porch. From then on, he slept in a different backyard or back porch every night. Once, finding the back door unlocked, he slept in a kitchen.